Good morning, Your Honor. Mike Gosler representing Matt Swicky Sr. and Inez Kasiba, the appellants. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes. There are three issues for the court to consider. There was, following the filing of the appeal, there was a motion brought by the respondent contending that the appeal of the underlying issue on the merits was not timely. The clerk reserved that for this panel, and so I think I should address that first. And I'd simply like to make two remarks in that regard. The Hat Island Community Association sought relief under two aspects of the Washington State Homeowners Association Act, which is RCW 6438. One, they justified the action on the part of the board to deny a vote to the members who called the special meeting based upon the authority of that statute, and that was part of the argument that was on the motion to dismiss. Following success on that motion, they filed a second motion asking for an award of attorney's fees under .050 of that same statute. That motion was granted in part, and the trial court exercised its discretion and awarded roughly half the requested fees. Following that, the Hat Island Community Association then filed a motion asking the court to enter final judgment, which was ultimately done on the 14th of November. Therefore, they basically split their relief into two separate motions. They recognized they didn't have a final judgment. They moved accordingly, and as such, the appeal that was filed by the Swickies, or Swicky and Kasiba, I submit, was timely. Alternatively, there's a unique situation here as well, because the decision on the appeal of the attorney's fees requires consideration of the merits of the underlying case. And that's because the standard under the Homeowners Association statute for awarding attorney's fees is whether this was an appropriate case, and whether it was an appropriate case turns on the merits. Under Rule on Appeal 18.8, the court has the discretion to consider the underlying merits and waive and extend the time for the appeal, and I submit under the circumstances present here, the court should do that.
Are you arguing that even if we reject the timeliness of appeal of the dismissal, that the appeal of the award of fees was timely?
Absolutely, because there was an amended notice of appeal filed, and that was within the time frame of entry of both orders. So this court certainly has before it the attorney's fee issue. That appeal is timely regardless of how you decide the issue on the underlying appeal. And my point is that there are two arguments or two issues involving the attorney's fee award that I think require the court to address the merits of the underlying claim. And that's because 6438050 basically says that a court may award attorney's fees if it's an appropriate case. And I think whether it's an appropriate case requires the court to consider whether the merits of the underlying decision. We cited in the brief the decision in Eagle Point, where the court basically set forth a policy under the Homeowners Association statute where an appropriate case to award fees would be if the court were to find the merits frivolous. By like token, if there was merit to the underlying case, even if the court decided it adversely to the plaintiff, that would be a case where it would be inappropriate. And so under that standard, I would argue that the underlying the merits need to be addressed.
But isn't it merely a discretionary standard?
No, the
trial court to determine what's appropriate? The statute has no definition of appropriate.
Well, I think the Eagle Point decision provides some criteria that the court's to consider in evaluating whether or not it's an appropriate case. And one of the factors is, was the underlying case frivolous or was it meritorious, even if the court decided the case adversely to the claimant? The amount of fees to be awarded is certainly within the discretion of the trial court. But there again, I think you need to consider the merits. In this case, the trial court found and inserted into the order a provision that it was not frivolous. The petitioners represented 400-plus lots of the 700 in the Hat Island Community Association, so they were already bearing a significant portion of the attorney's fees. And anyway, all those things factored into the court's underlying decision. One other argument I would make with respect, and did make in our brief with respect to the attorney's fee award, is that I think the trial court improperly invoked 6438 in awarding fees because the underlying case was brought based under the bylaws that were adopted by the Hat Island Community Association. The bylaws contained no attorney's fee award. So the question is, was this a claim under 6438 or was this a claim under the bylaws? I think the Roats versus Blakely Island case, which I cited in our brief, is right on point. That case involved a situation where there was a claim as to whether or not the Open Meetings Act provisions of Article of 6438 were violated, but the primary issue was whether the board exceeded its authority under the bylaws. And the Court of Appeals in that case ruled that the primary thrust of that case involved whether the bylaws were properly abided by, and therefore attorney's fees couldn't be awarded under 6438. And in this case, the arguments, as I lay it out in the merits in our brief, really go pretty much to the heart of the bylaws. And specifically,
what did your complaint seek in terms of relief?
Sought declaratory relief that if the proper quorum of homeowners requests a private a special meeting of the members and asks for an agenda to be set that can be voted on, that the board is required to give notice of that meeting and to allow the meeting to occur and to allow the members to vote. In this case, what happened?
Wasn't it because the assertion was the bylaws were being applied inconsistently with the homeowner statute and the nonprofit statute, and didn't you ask for other relief authorized by law? And wouldn't the statute constitute the law?
Well, we referenced the Nonprofit Corporation Act and the Homeowners Act because that's basically the enabling legislation that authorizes the Homeowners Association.
But if it was just a matter of contract, why bother?
Well, I think you always have to. Homeowners associations, in particular those operating as nonprofit corporations, have to abide by the underlying statutes that give them the rights, the enabling legislation, if you will, to adopt what they did. And so the Homeowners Association statute and the Nonprofit Corporation Act authorize the board to adopt bylaws that contain certain provisions, and that occurred here. And then the question is, were those bylaws properly adopted? They were. And then did the board honor the bylaws by allowing the members to call for a special meeting and then vote? In this instance, the board basically said, we'll allow you to have the meeting and we'll allow you to discuss the subject, that is, whether the assessments should be revoked, but we won't let you vote on them. And that violates the provision in the bylaws that authorizes the transaction of business. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Jeremy Stillwell. May it please the Court, my name is Jeremy Stillwell. I'm representing the Hat Island Community Association. I want to first address the motion to dismiss. The Hat Island Community Association didn't bring any claims. Council refers to the fact that we brought and sought some relief. We didn't bring any claims. We sought no relief. The association was sued. The association was sued, did not file an answer or a counterclaim, but instead brought a CR 12B6 motion to dismiss, which was granted on September 28, 2012. 33 days later, on October 31, 2012, appellants filed their notice of appeal. That was untimely. Appellants, just like the appellants in both the Carrera and the Bouchon case, are trying to say our time was extended because the defendant, the prevailing party in this case, made a motion for attorney's fees. That motion for attorney's fees did not extend the time, nor did the fact that we were granted attorney's fees and had a judgment entered for those fees extend the time for an appeal. Counsel refers to a rule that would allow this court to extend the time under certain circumstances, but we never saw a motion to extend that time.
Now, you never filed a notice of appeal, right? You filed a notice for cross appeal?
Yes, on one issue, Judge. And our issue on cross appeal was that the court found that the attorney's fees.
The initial notice of appeal is untimely. Can you file a cross appeal to an untimely notice of appeal?
Well, I should clarify. Their notice of appeal for the dismissal of the claim, the 12B6 dismissal, was untimely. They did timely file an appeal of the decision on the attorney's fees. They were within their 30 days of the court's decision to grant and to
and
order
so
fees.
You filed your notice in response to that?
Yes. Our cross appeal is that their timely appeal that has to do with attorney's fees, we cross appealed that same issue as well, the attorney's fee issue and that alone. Because their claims were dismissed in their entirety, there was nothing for the court to do. It was an appealable order.
Well, why should attorney's fees be awarded? I mean, nobody had to look outside the bylaws to resolve this issue.
There's two reasons. I do think that someone had to look outside the bylaws to resolve this issue. You had to look at RCW 6438 that defines what the authority of the board of directors is, and more specifically, if you look at their complaint and if you look at the pleadings that they submitted in their motion for protective order, they specifically allege as part of their claim that the association violated its duties under the bylaws and Washington law, and in their motion for a preliminary injunction, they specifically claimed the association violated RCW 6438050 by not allowing them to vote as they requested at a meeting of the association. Turning to the substantive issues on appeal. The Washington Homeowners Act provides specifically in 6438025 subsection 1 that except as provided by the association's governing documents or this chapter, the board of directors shall act in all instances on behalf of the association. The statute.
I think I'd rather you spend some more time on attorney's fees. Your argument is principle. I mean, you can defend the that this was an appropriate case, but I'm interested in the reduction the court made. You know, in doing a lodestar calculation, I'm wondering if we have a form over substance problem here, and I'm trying to be critical of your opinion. So the court does a lodestar, looks at the fees, looks at the effort, looks at the hourly rate, multiplies it together, and said, yeah, that lodestar is reasonable, but actually it isn't. I'm going to cut it in half. So if we grant the relief you request, we strike it, we send it back, the trial court gets a do-over, the trial court goes, you know, that was too many hours. I'm going to cut the hours by half. I'm going to approve the same rate, and I'm going to enter judgment for the same amount. What's the point? Wasn't it ultimately the court saying too much time was expended and too much money was charged?
I don't believe that to be the case. And if you look at the order granting the attorney's fees, the court made specific findings of fact that the amount of time spent was reasonable, that the rates were reasonable, and the amounts that we were asking for was reasonable. But in its discretion, the court reduced the amount. The distinction, I believe, is whether or not.
Why can't it exercise its discretion in that way?
Here's the difference, I believe. I believe the trial courts have discretion to determine what a reasonable fee is. But do trial
well,
courts have
the discretion? That's a fact. Well,
right. That's a fact. The courts
that's
have that
fact.
Discretion.
So courts make fact-finding, right? So that's not what's discretionary. So where does the discretion come in?
The discretion is, does the trial court then have discretion to grant less than what it determines to be the reasonable fee?
Yeah, why not?
Because the case law and if
why are we stuck with this lodestar formula? That's what Judge Chappell was asking. The lodestar formula simply is a product of two facts. Are the hours factually found? Is the rate factually found? So that doesn't really involve any discretion on the trial court at all. They're just a potted plant after they make findings. So where does the discretion come in other than to say, no, not going to, this is the lodestar, but the lodestar is just a starting point. It's not the be-all, end-all. I'm not going to award that much. I presided over this, decided on a 12B-something motion. No reason that I want it, that I think that it's worth this much money. Not going to do it.
Our position is that the trial court has the discretion to determine what a reasonable fee is. Under the Homeowners Act, they have
a reasonable fee can be the lodestar formula, rate times hours. But why does it have to be the lodestar formula?
Why can't the court say, look, your effort here makes sense. We understand why you did all that. But, you know, when we get to the end of the day, this was a small dispute. And even if it seemed reasonable at the time, in hindsight, too much. 0.5 multiply or reduce the fee.
It doesn't appear that our trial court made that decision. It appears that on the record, our trial court looked at the number of hours, the amount of time, found it reasonable, and said, that's a reasonable amount, but I'm awarding less. And if you look at the statute, in the appropriate case, a court can award reasonable attorney's fees. What our order says is...
Why don't we just assume that the trial court awarded the amount that it was thought was appropriate in this case? That this wasn't an appropriate case for that, for the amount of fees you requested, but it was an appropriate case for the amount of fees it awarded, exercising its discretion, rather than just doing math.
If you start looking into Eagle Point, and Eagle Point was a case where you had the party that was seeking fees, I think the court used the term, was marginally the prevailing party, and still found that even though it was marginally prevailing party, the purpose of the statute is to put the prevailing party in as close to as full position as if the other party had fully performed. There was a Consumer Protection Act component in Eagle Point. Applying that same law here, we're not the marginally prevailing party. We were the completely prevailing party on a motion for 12B6. If you're going to apply that reasoning to the exact same language in the Homeowners Act, then in order to put my client in the position that they were before they were sued, and sued in a manner that they subject to 12B6.
What are the limits to the term appropriate case? That's not usual in a fee or cost shifting provision. Usually it's just prevailing party. So what are the limits to the words appropriate case?
Certainly, the reference to a frivolous lawsuit.
Well,
the legislature
knows how to award fees based on a frivolous lawsuit. It's got several statutes that do that.
I agree that those terms give the trial courts broad discretion whenever you use the terms in an appropriate case.
Thank you.